is the Victorian Country Hour with Warwick Long on ABC Radio Victoria.
Oh, yes, it's the coldest start to a Victorian summer in decades. So, of course, we've sent our entire team here in the Country Hour out in the field to speak to you about farming issues today this lunchtime. It is the Country Hour's 80th birthday this week, and to celebrate, we're on the road. Rural reporters are all out over the next few days bringing you stories and discussions from regional Victoria like we do best. We'll be in orchards, harvesters, on boats, around kitchen tables, and a whole lot more. Today, we'll take you to a spud shed, a modern fruit packing shed, and Victoria's high country. It should be a real treat. And as always, you can send in a text because there's been a bit of rain around. I'd love to know if it's been falling where you are. You can send that text to 0467 842 722. We'll have rural news, the weather, and the markets, all of the things we normally have on the menu as well, as plenty to discuss here on the Country Hour. Let's do it.
The Victorian Country Hour with Warwick Long on ABC Radio Victoria.
So let's get on the road today and head to, where else do you want to go on a cold day to start summer? And that's near Ballarat. Jane McNaughton, one of our lead reporters here at the Country Hour team, is out and about in a spud shed today. Jane, what can you tell us?
I can tell you, I confirm it is cold here in a spud shed north of Ballarat, about 25 minutes north of Ballarat here in Torello. I'm at Catherine Meyer's place, a name that many that listen to the Country Hour may have heard many, many times over the past 5 or 6 years. This spud shed is warmer than outside. It's just been trying to tease us with a bit of rain over the last sort of 10 to 20 minutes here, and it has got a bit gusty. But without further ado, Catherine Myers, spud mixed cereal crop farmer, is here with us. Catherine Myers, welcome back to the Country Hour.
Thanks, Jane.
So what has your experience been with the Country Hour?
It started early on. So it'd be nearly 5 years ago now when we'd been going with the transmission lines for about 6 months, and they had a community meeting in at Myers Rest, and I heard Steve talking about it on the morning program, and I thought, gee, I don't know what meeting is talking about. That is not what I experienced. So I flicked a text message in, and I remember the heart palpitations and the anxiety of talking to the media via text message. And Jane, I think you were listening into it that morning, and so I think there's something here. I think this is more than just a couple of whinging NIMBYs. I think there's a bit of an issue. And so the Country Hour and the 7 News seven o'clock news picked it up then, and yeah, we've just gone with it from then. And I just think it's such a good reflection of how good the Country Hour is, of being tuned into those local communities and picking up those big issues years before anyone else realises that it's as hot as it is.
And I was actually the first person to interview for the media, which you're now an old hand at, really. So how did it feel getting that phone call?
It was weird. It didn't feel like it was happening to me. I thought, crikey, who wants to talk to Catherine Myers about transmission lines? I don't know anything about that. I think at that stage I really knew how to turn on a light switch, and that's all I knew about electricity. And it was an experience. I remember ringing my parents and saying, I'm going to be on the radio tomorrow, you got to listen in. And now it's sort of about a week later, I'm like, oh yeah, I was on the radio last week, you should, you know, listen back if you can. It's certainly changed.
Yeah, and obviously, as you just mentioned, you weren't in the media before the Western Renewables Link entered your life. Obviously that project, much like we've been hearing about V&I West more recently, has been very stressful for communities that are opposing this. But has there been a silver lining to the Western Renewables Link?
Yeah, look, I think you've always got to look at that. The toll that project has taken on people has been enormous and unimaginable for people that haven't been involved. But there's certainly been really good things to come from it on a personal nature for a lot of people as well. So for me, I married into a district. I married a farmer. You know, for years I was Ben's wife. And I remember going to a community meeting a couple of years after this started, and my husband actually happened to come along to that one, and they said, oh, this is Ben, he's married to Catherine. I went, oh, this is great. I've married into an intergenerational farm, and people are recognising me as my own person. So that's been really good, and it's sort of lit a bit of a fire in me around advocacy too, and it's just, I've really enjoyed the opportunity to use the skills and abilities that I've got to speak on behalf of others who find it hard to have that conversation. So whether it's been around farm safety or the WRL or any other, particularly in the land use conflict space, I do a lot of work. I really find that really satisfying.
And has it You mentioned that you're not just Ben's wife anymore, but has it sort of brought the community together, although it's not for a positive reason necessarily as far as you're concerned, but have you made friends?
Yeah, oh, so many. It's amazing. I've got friends right from the very start of the project down at Plumpton near Sydenham towards Melbourne, farmers there, and then right up through V&O West as well. It's been great. It's been an opportunity to catch up with people that I went to uni with and haven't seen for years. But then also... the uniting effect of this project means you've got a whole heap of people in the room that you wouldn't normally get together. So you've got the fairly traditional conservative farmers who are there, but you've also got landcare groups, you've got environmentalists, you've got musicians who have moved up from Melbourne and are concerned about the impact this project's having. So it's been a really positive side effect to the community, I suppose. And I remember during COVID when all the lockdowns were terrible and we couldn't get together and we couldn't have protests and we couldn't have community meetings about this, we developed a, I think you probably remember, Dana, a bonfire line the length of the project, and hundreds of landholders sat out in their paddocks with a bonfire, and you could look east and west, and for as far as you could see this line of bonfires along where the proposed project was, and it brought everyone together in a way that we couldn't during COVID.
And just a quick update as well, the Western Renewables Link is currently in the process of the environmental effects statement hearings, which I believe are the longest environmental inquiry in Victoria's history. Just briefly, what's happening in that space at the moment?
Yeah, so the proponent goes first. It's a bit like a normal court case where so the proponent goes first. They presented their expert evidence and expert witnesses, for probably 3 or 4 weeks. They did a bus tour through the line of the project to show the council, or the panel, what the landscape looks like and what they're actually talking about. And now the councils are currently producing their expert witnesses, so sort of like a bit like a defence after the prosecution's gone in a normal court case.
And that's going until March, I believe?
It's going to be a really long one. So the VFF will be presenting their evidence either late January or early February. And I know our personal one, my husband and I, we won't be presenting until the end of February. So it's a very long, drawn-out process, but it's a massive project. They received 577 submissions from local landholders or people concerned or in favour of the project. And that's out of this world for a project like this. I think Marinus Link received 27, which is a similarly sized project.
And just putting your time with the Western Renewables Link to one side, because there's much more to you than that, Catherine. It's a chilly start to summer here, to say the least. How's the spud and sheep farm going?
Oh, look, it's ticking along. It's definitely a different season to where we thought we were 8 or 10 weeks ago. It was looking very stressful here through winter, as it did across much of the state. And we thought those rains that we got sort of mid-late winter, we thought, oh, maybe it's too late, maybe it's not going to help, maybe it'll cut out again. But it's just sort of kept raining. And I know we planted quite a few paddocks of cereal crops thinking, look, even if we get ankle-high feed, you know, that's something for the sheep to go onto. And looks like we're going to harvest crops off all of them. So it's, it's a very different season. And as for the spuds, we're well and truly into planting now. The commercial guys are well into planting. Seed guys are getting going now. We're always just that little bit later than the commercial growers. So that's where we're up to. I know people who are on surface water will be tight this year because we just didn't get the runoff during winter, and we certainly didn't have pumping licences during winter from creeks like we normally do. But it's still underway and you can't hold a good spud farmer down.
And over the weekend, everyone's going to be talking about the rain today on the Country Hour. Yep. You're listening to Jane McNaughton. Catherine Myers, a potato farmer just north of Ballarat, is with me here. What was the rain gauge like over the weekend?
Yeah, I think we got 22 sort of the first half of the weekend, and then we got another 10 yesterday and overnight. So pretty happy with that.
And what does that mean for your operation?
Oh, it just keeps the grass greener a bit longer and keeps things ready for getting worked up. I think, the soil as it's getting dug up at the moment is just looking phenomenal. So it's just beautiful. It's crumbling lovely.
And you spoke earlier as well about you've done some advocacy work in the farm safety space. We have unfortunately had a few deaths recently with harvest. So have you... on your farm, do you try and take extra precautions around this time of year, or like with the sheep farming, for example? You said that you're quite busy with that at the moment. So when there's these sort of rush periods, is safety front of mind?
Look, it always has to be there. And I know It's a tricky one because there's so many other pressures on you. If there's a corner that can be cut, you'll always take it. But we had a near miss here on the farm last year with one of our kids. He got involved with a bit of machinery and he's great now. He's come really good. But it's just something that you've always got to keep in mind. And as fantastic as it is having kids on farm, and I love it, and I would never try and stop them being involved in the farm, it's just something you've always got to keep in mind that their brains work differently and they may not be... They may not understand what's going to happen with the stock or with the machinery in the same way that grown-ups will. So, yeah, it always definitely ticking in the back of the mind.
And the brain's just starting up again here, Catherine. Do you want much more of this over the next couple of days?
Look, it'd be really nice to get some hay cut and baled. Yeah. But I was talking to Kim, actually, the other day, Kim Tuffer, who's working with the VFF in the drought response. She said, oh, things must be getting close to being back to normal because farmers are whinging about the rain. So it'd be nice to have a couple of dry days.
Indeed. Catherine, thank you very much for your time on the Country Hour today and also for your expertise and being a... phone call away for me as a reporter over the last 5 or so years. Looking forward to continuing our relationship, and thank you very much again for your time on the Country Hour today.
Pleasure, and happy birthday to Country Hour. I don't know what rural Australia would be without it.
Thank you very much. That's Catherine Myers. There was Torello Potato Farmer just north of Ballarat. I'm going to try and pack this OB kit up now pretty quickly and jump in the car and put it in the car before we all get hailed on by the looks of it. So I'll throw back to you in the studio, Woz.
Find another layer to put on if you're that close to Ballarat. Jane McNaughton out at Torello there in a spud shed to launch really what our rural reporters are doing over today and tomorrow here on the Country Hour, spending some time out on farms. Spending time with people that we talk to a lot, but also talking about issues they're facing in rural and regional Victoria right now. Plenty of texts coming in on the rain and how much you've had. Leo says 38.5 millimetres at Rose River over the weekend, 142.5 for November, 952 for the year to date. Actually on track for an average year, though most of the rain is in the second half of the year. Really interestingly, I love your breakdowns. Thanks for that. High Warwick, another 30 millimetres over the weekend at Tynong North. November rainfall at Tynong North was 206 millimetres. I'm praying for sunshine now, says Jill. Thank you, Jill. And Jamie says 34 millimetres at Carrier, north of Camperdown since last Wednesday. Fantastic rain to finish off the Captain Canola. Love to hear that too, Jamie. Oh, look, a few more are coming through as we go. 32 millimetres over the weekend, 620 for the year, 220 of that in the last 2 months. Cut grass, waiting to be baled around the district. Weather is everything to the farmers' year. Drought to flooding rains, not quite, thank goodness, says Heather at Dunkeld. You can keep those texts coming with how much rain you've had over the weekend. I'd be really interested to know where you're sitting. There's still a little bit more coming. We had an almighty little downpour in Shepparton earlier this morning. I'd be interested to know how it's looking at your place. You can keep them coming. 0467 842 722. We're off to another part of Victoria next, though, here on the Country Hour.
The Country Hour, celebrating 80 years in 2025.
My name's Richard Jackson. I'm a retired agricultural consultant, now living in Melbourne. Worked in Gippsland and then worked all over Australia. And when I moved to Melbourne, I felt very disconnected from agriculture because I couldn't hear the ABC Country Hour. Somebody told me about the app, so I hooked into the app and now I can listen to it as often as I like, or listen to the Interstate Country Hour programs on the ABC, and it's just terrific. Got the phone in the pocket with the ABC Country Hour going, and sometimes people stare at me, but nevertheless, it keeps me in touch, and I really love that because I might have retired, but I'm still totally interested in agriculture and what happens. And the Country Hour gives a blend of all sorts of information, good and bad, but it's most important to keep up, and that's what the ABC Country Hour does, thanks to you.
80 years of the Country Hour.
Yes, you can find us in the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Victorian Country Hour. We're the most downloaded Country Hour in Australia. Victorian one, that is. So if you can keep that up for us, that would be great. So wherever you get your podcasts, just search Victorian Country Hour. It's 19 past 12. Let's go to another part of Australia now. We're just in a spud shed. I think we're going to a packing shed right now in Victoria's Goulburn Valley. Justine Longmore does a lot of work for us in the online space for ABC Rural for the Victorian Country Hour. But you would know her a lot from her coverage of the Bureau of Meteorology website over the last few months. Today, we've let her loose to go and find some fruit. Justine, where do we find you today?
Hello, Warwick. Yes, you'd find me in a packing shed, a fruit packing shed in Ardmona, so about 15 minutes west of Shepparton. So in the fruit bowl of Australia, where 90% of the country's pears are grown here in the Golden Valley, and about half of Australia's apples. And joining me is fruit grower and general manager of Plunkett Orchards, Andrew Plunkett. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So we are standing in a packing shed, but when we say packing shed, we're not talking small scale. It's a pretty big shed. Can you give us a bit of an idea of what this shed is? And yeah, it's pretty big.
Yeah, so this is our packing hall where we do the function of getting the fruit into the cartons. So we've got a pear stone fruit machine on one side and an apple packing lines here. And the building room is about 11,000 square metres.
That's pretty big. So there's, I can see in front of me, a robot machine that's sorting apples that are coming off a conveyor belt and putting them into trays, and then those apples are being spat out and come along another conveyor belt where people are, you know, wearing high-vis vests, they've got the hair netting on, and they're sorting and looking at the apples. So what's going on with this machine and what these people are doing?
Yeah, so it's called an ATP, an automatic tray packer, and so the fruit's already pre-sized in our other building, so it comes into this shed. One size, one grade in the bin. And then this particular machine is, once a fruit arrives to it, it's got rollers and cameras, so it spins the apples until the red side's facing up. Then it's got suction cups. Once the red side's facing up, they clamp onto the apples, and then it can rotate 90 degrees each way. So then it can place the apple in the tray red side up and all of the stems facing the same way.
So when you say red side up, is that because it's the most appealing to customers when they're in the shops or, you know, looking at it?
That's right. Yeah, it's all about the aesthetic perception. So, yeah, we always try and have the red side up. It just looks nice and even on the shelf. And that's the side we also put the PLU sticker on. So then they travel along, and then the girls at the end here are just loading them into the cartons ready for the supermarket and just having the once-over human look before they head off to distribution centres.
And what variety of apple have we got here today?
We're doing Pink Lady, so these are out of storage, and we'll supply Pink Ladies 52 weeks of the year. So this is last season's crop, and we'll be packing these again until the next season's harvested in April.
And on the fruit orchard, we're coming into a pretty busy time of the year for you. What else have you got coming up here in Ardmona?
Yeah, so we've still got plenty of months to go on the old season fruit, but next week we'll start packing new season stone fruit. So we'll start with some donut peaches. Apricots are kicking off. So it's an interesting time of year because it's a blend of old season and then the new summer fruit.
And as we mentioned, we're talking about robots and different things, conveyor belts. I mean, that's probably been around for a while, but innovation seems to be the key to kind of staying relevant and keeping, you know, business going. What are the requirements? Why do you need to go down this path and innovate and look for technology that can make it easier?
Well, it's twofold. One's keeping our costs under control so that we can keep fruit affordable for consumers in Australia, because labour makes up 75% of the cost of getting fruit to a consumer. And then the other part is to try and come up with machines that not only can save a little bit of human time and money, but just actually remove the need for us to employ as many people, because during COVID and the last few years, it's been difficult to source as many people as we need, particularly when we've got a lumpy demand for people, you know, lots of seasonal requirements. And so we're trying to use machinery to help iron out the spikes.
And what other challenges are you facing here? We've obviously been through quite a dry period in Victoria. Is climate impacting your operation here as well?
Yeah, so I've had a tough year this year with the hot summer, and so we're getting Pink Lady pricing, people may have noticed, a bit more expensive on the shelves, and that's really a result of the fruit we lost during last summer. It was just too hot and the Pink Ladies didn't colour. So we've got, the industry has less fruit going into this time of year than normal. But yeah, climate change has definitely been interesting the last few years, and it's not necessarily been around heat, it's been around erratic weather. So it's winds, it's storms, it's hail, and you know, when we first started thinking about climate change, we thought just about heat. So we had hail netting and overhead sprinklers in the orchard to try and combat heat. But we didn't really factor in this angry, strange, unpredictable weather. And in fact, some of the problems we've had this year with the heat in summer, although it wasn't a particularly hot summer compared to other Shepparton summers, we had come off the back of two really wet, cool summers. And so I think as much as anything, the trees were just shocked from going through a couple of seasons where we were getting 4-inch rainfall events in summer and quite mild to then having a year with no rain and total heat. So yeah, I think the trees are as confused as we are.
And is that the reality of, I suppose, any farming business, any, you know, for fruit growers, that the years are going to be different? And is that why you have different varieties of fruit and diversify? Like, how do you cope with that, I suppose, the erratic weather and the variable seasons?
Yeah, so we have by get around it by having a few varieties so that hopefully we've got one variety harvested in a period where the weather's not too bad. And then we've also, in our packing shed here, we're trying to pack, you know, lots of other fruits so that we're not just reliant on what happens to apples during the season. So we pack pears and peaches, nectarines, pomegranates. So we're trying to spread ourselves out as much as we can to not have all your eggs in the one basket, so to speak.
Yes, when I drove in, there were some pears in some crates out the front of the main office. I believe that you're ripening them for a different market. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, they're getting ripened for a puree, like baby food type order. So they're last season's pears and they need to be softened up, and they're going to a factory to be made into a paste and puree products. And that's the off runs from our fresh fruit. So it's the fruit that's too small, too big, too marked.
Yeah, so finding different markets for all your different fruit that you're growing here. And where does most of your fruit get sold?
So in the case of pears, it's still predominantly export, fresh exports. So Canada is our biggest market, then New Zealand, and then Southeast Asia. In the case of apples, it's mostly here in Australia. And for us, mostly Sydney and Brisbane.
You're listening to The Country Hour. I'm Justine Longmore, and I'm coming to you from a fruit packing shed in Ardmona in the Goulburn Valley. And this week we're celebrating 80 years of The Country Hour with our rural reporters out and about. And with me now is someone who's working in this packing shed for Plunkett Orchards, and that's Kevin Budiarty. Welcome to The Country Hour.
Thank you.
So where have you come from, Kevin?
I come from Indonesia. If you heard Bali, I live there.
You live in Bali. Wow, that's quite an amazing thing. A lot of people go to travel for holidays to Bali, and you're here working. So why did you choose to come here to work?
Because I would like to try the physical jobs, because what I was doing back there was accounting jobs, everything in front of the laptop. So I would try the physical jobs here in Australia, where they have a good pay, where they have a good culture, and I would love to see the country as well.
And how long will you be working at this orchard?
At this orchard, so far still no plan of leaving. I'm still enjoying this. Lovely friends, lovely. Andrew is really kind, and maybe for this season at least, I will be staying here.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. And Andrew, just a little look back quickly at the history here. Ardmona and the Goulburn Valley has got quite a long history of fruit growing, and your family goes back quite a few generations. When we're looking forward to the future, we talk about we're celebrating 80 years of the country, your family's been here for a while. What's next? What's sort of the future for fruit growing in this area and across the country?
Well, it's changing quickly. I mean, historically, all of the orchards here in Shepparton were here for the factories to grow canned fruit and predominantly to send that canned fruit back to England. So obviously that's changed a lot, and the processing requirements is getting, you know, less and less, because there's so much fresh fruit available for people all year round. So canning, the need for cans is probably diminishing. So I think for us here in Shepparton, we'll keep diversifying into new fresh products. And the industry was really lucky in this district that Pink Lady came along. Shepparton's pretty hot to grow apples, hard to grow most apples, but Pink Lady, being a really late variety, was suited to Shepparton. So we were lucky on that front. But now we've got to work out what's next. And so if you look around the district, there's lots of new varieties that have come into play. Cherries, and there's a lot of cherry production, more stone fruit. So, who knows what's next? But it's one thing we know is it keeps changing.
Wonderful. Well, I think for me what's next is maybe trying to get my hand on one of those juicy apples that's heading off to the supermarkets, because they do look delicious and gorgeous. Well, thank you so much, Andrew, for having us here in your fruit packing shed in Ardmona. And that's it from me, Warwick, today.
Thanks very much for that, Justine Longmore, in the packing shed. Amazing to hear how industrial a fruit packing shed sounds with all of that automatic equipment that's going through and colouring and sizing and sending the apples off. you forget that there's all that fresh food around at the same time until Justine mentions the delicious-looking apples. We are going to the High Country shortly on the Country Hour as well as we celebrate our 80th birthday and also talk about important issues, the season, what people are facing wherever they are around the state, doing all of that and more. Many of you sending in your rainfall figures too. David says 80 millimetres for November at Coleraine with a 5-year average of 45, saying it's looking quite good there now. And happy summer. It's 4 degrees here in Stanley in northern Victoria. Says somebody sent me the photo of the car dashboard out in the vineyard just to prove how cold it is in Stanley. I'll take your word for it today. Rainfall in Ararat total for the weekend, 35 millimetres. Saturday's rainfall, 29.5 was the highest single recording for the year, says JK. And I am Pat from Ararat, said 38 millimetres in my backyard. Happy birthday to the Country Hour. Love the program. Thanks very much for that, Pat. Guess what? Because everybody's out, I get to present rural news. That's coming up for you next.
The Victorian Country Hour with Warwick Long on ABC Radio Victoria.
In today's rural news, a major Victorian and Queensland salad grower has gone into voluntary administration and cut more than 180 jobs just weeks before Christmas. Wade Stevens reports.
Dickie Bill operates two farms at Mafra in Gippsland and west of Bundaberg in Queensland, growing salads and herbs for domestic and international markets. Last week, the family-owned business halted operations suddenly, owing creditors hundreds of thousands of dollars, putting 182 workers out of a job. In a statement, owner Ryan McLeod says the news is devastating for his family, which is heartbroken for all of their employees. He says extreme weather events such as cyclones and flooding has affected both the Queensland and Victorian operations in recent years.
In the Northern Territory, the Territory's largest banana farms lost about 40% of its fruit during Cyclone Fina. The farm is located at Lambles Lagoon and normally supplies about 100% of the top end's banana needs. Farm manager Mark Smith says the NT will have to import bananas from Queensland for a few months until the farm can get back to full production. But he feels the damage could have been much worse.
Anything without any fruit hanging up lasted pretty well. You know, obviously if you've got 40 kilos hanging around your neck, you're going to fall over a little bit easier than if you haven't.
Yeah, where we're standing, there's banana trees over and the bunches that were in their blue bags are on the ground. Are they salvageable at all, that fruit?
No. There's a couple of reasons why. I mean, you know, they've been over too long, so they haven't been fed properly, and the sunburn. And you don't want them, you don't want to harvest anything that's been in sort of runoff water either.
The Pastoralist Association of West Darling in outback New South Wales says the Bureau of Meteorology needs to be held accountable for its spending after pouring nearly $100 million into a website but leaving black spots on its radar network. The Bureau of Meteorology admitted its website upgrade cost taxpayers $96.5 million. But Terry Smith from the Pastoralist Association says money could have been better spent on putting weather radars in the far west where black spots are causing major issues.
There's a black spot where it's not covered. Yeah, if we're trying to truck stock or we've got transports that are heading out on unsealed roads, they need to know whether the rain's coming, so they've got time to get through, given that it might be a 4 or 5 or 6 hour journey on that unsealed road. If they can look at a weather radar and see the weather's coming, give them a rough idea how long they've got to get through, if they'll get through, or if they need to load or unload. And I guess the case in point would be the hailstorm that hit Broken Hill in 2016. The first thing Broken Hill knew about it was when windows started to get smashed. So would have been nicer to have a bit more warning to say maybe we need to shift some cars under cover and, you know, and do things like that.
And let's stay in the outback but go to the desert country of South Australia, which might be the last place you'd expect to find a boat, let alone one big enough to carry a road train. But after storms over Queensland earlier this year saw a swelling Cooper Creek and it cut the Birdsville track north of Maree, it emerged as a way to keep the freight route open, particularly for cattle. Kath Sullivan reports, now it's hard at work.
The floods are good news for pastoralists like Peter Nunn, who manages Clifton Hills Station. It's one of the largest cattle stations in the world and can hold up to 21,500 cattle.
We always love a flood, eh? We always think You beauty.
But since June, the flooded Cooper Creek has cut the Birdsville track. At least that was until a barge named Margaret arrived.
I think it looks like a floating steel tank, actually.
About 400 kilometres south of Birdsville and 800 kilometres north of Adelaide, the barge is now ferrying road trains of cattle, freight and grey nomads across the Cooper. It's come at a cost of more than $27 million to the South Australian and federal governments. The barge operators say they're exploring storage options for Margaret for when the water recedes and the Birdsville track reopens.
Love the name Margaret, and also love the idea of caravans riding the barge with road trains of cattle as well. For today, that's Rural News. I had to finish it like that, don't you? Even if I'm throwing back to myself, Rural News for you today. Plenty of text still coming in on the amount of rain that you've had, Ruth, in rural Leongatha. Did I read yours out? 167 millimetres of rain for November, 8.14 for the end of the year so far, and 20.5 so far for December 1st, says Ruth. Wow, full gambit there. Graham says, rainfall at Addington in November, 115 millimetres in total so far. From January to November, 641 millimetres. And Tony at Mansfield's had 34 millimetres over the weekend there. And Craig, shout out to you down in the southwest where we know things have been tough over the last little while. Says, summer silage was cutting in the rain at Bullahair. How good after the last 18 months and a few strong arm emojis, a couple of thumbs up, and Craig's having a great old time. Craig, love to hear it. Thanks so much for your text. Let's go to Jenny Horvat, though, to find out what's happening weather-wise around our state, a senior forecaster at the Bureau of Meteorology. Hi, Jenny.
Hello, Warwick.
Is the rain hanging around today?
Yeah, look, it's pretty showery statewide at the moment, having a bit of a look at the satellite and radar, and we have got some thunderstorms dispersed through that. I was going to say mostly north of the flood, but there's been a few down south as well. So it's going to be a little bit hit and miss with those showers and thunderstorms throughout today. And it was a bit of a wet weekend, just a couple of notable rainfall figures in the 24 hours up until 9 a.m. this morning. Daylesford picking up over 30 millimetres of rain, Mount Buller around 25, looking at around Wilson's Prom, 17 millimetres. So it was a little bit sort of hit and miss through there, and just having a look at those rainfall figures since 9 a.m, again, Wilson's Prom's picked up around 7 millimetres through there, up around the hills, Falls Creek around 3 millimetres. Horsham's also picked up around 3. So it is widespread, but again, it is a little bit hit and miss. And with those rainfall figures for pretty much November, the average has come out to be average to very much above average for southern parts of the state. However, in the north, tended to be a bit more average there, Warwick.
Okay, and let's then go through the week. A cold day to start summer today. How long does that hang around for?
Yeah, that's right. So we have got those very cold conditions out there at the moment. So looking at cool to cold with those maximum temperatures well below average. But we'll see this sort of, we've had that front go through. We've got that colder air mass. We've got another high pressure system coming over from SA. So that should settle things down. It should be mostly dry tomorrow, especially across northern parts. Maybe still a little bit of isolated shower activity tomorrow morning on and south of the Divide, but starting to clear up from the west as we head into the afternoon and evening. Still those temperatures looking a little bit on the cool side there with those maximum temperatures. Still below average on Tuesday, but as we head into Wednesday and that high really comes over, we'll start to see those mild to warm temperatures coming through. Those maximum temperatures more around average on Wednesday and looking pretty dry and sunny out there. Sunny start to Thursday, again with those warm to hot maximum temperatures well above average with those fresh northerly winds as we've got that high pressure system now out to our east. But we'll start off a bit sunny. We'll start to see some cloud building during the day, and maybe a little bit of isolated light showers starting to move into the southwestern central districts as we head into the afternoon and evening on Thursday there. Bit of a trough and low coming across on Friday, so again we'll start to see a little bit of that shower activity increasing on and south of the Divide, pushing into the northeastern parts as we head during the afternoon, whilst they're clearing from the west. We could also see some possible afternoon thunderstorms, mainly around the north and east there on the Friday, with those maximum temperatures well above average above the Divide there, but cooler to mild over the south. And as we head into the weekend with that system coming through, we'll see those temperatures below average for the weekend again. So a bit of a mixed bag there, Warwick.
Yeah, so when we're talking rainfall coming that Thursday, Friday, are we expecting significant significant rain, or is it just light? What are we looking at there?
Look, at this stage, it's looking pretty light. If you were to see some of that thunderstorm activity, you could see a little bit more, but we're probably not as much as what we have seen over the late weekend or even today. It's not looking quite as much as those days.
Okay. So we build up, we get hot, and then it sort of cools down again. Do we have any warnings, I suppose, over the next 24 hours or 48 hours we need to keep an eye on?
Yeah, look, with those cooler temperatures through there, we are looking at warnings out for our sheep graziers. So with those cooler and wet temperatures, especially across the Wimmera, north central, north east, south west, central west, and south Gippsland, as well as east Gippsland forecast district. Should have broadly said broadly across the state there, Warwick. That's a bit of a mouthful, wasn't it?
No, it's all right. I much prefer to know the areas. I think that's great. Anything else we need to know, Jenny?
No, that'll keep you going, yeah. Just a pretty showery out there today, and we've got some thunderstorms around and a bit of heat coming as we head towards the end of the week.
It'll warm up by the end of the week. I think many people will be celebrating that fact because it's mighty cold out there today. That's Jenny Horvat there, Senior Forecaster at the Bureau of Meteorology, taking you through the full forecast. Plenty of texts coming in still. Pete at Penshurst says 103 millimetres for November, 657 for the year, which is close to average, with 500 of it coming after June. So 5/6, I suppose, of your rainfall coming after June. That's amazing, Pete. What a stat. Thank you very much for sending that through. Keep them coming. 129 in Yendon for November, bringing the year to date to 692, which is much closer to the yearly average than last year, I bet. Thank you for that. And Kylie at Daysdale had 10 millimetres over the weekend, 31 millimetres for November, 340 millimetres for the year. Safe travels this week, says Kylie. Thank you for the Christmas card to the office this week as well, Kylie. Let's head to Victoria's High Country now as the Country Hour continues its tour with everybody out on the road this week. Emma Field is the executive producer of this program. She's our boss, right? And she's up in the High Country with some heavy hitters today. Emma, take us there. What's going on where you are?
G'day, Warwick. I am coming to you from the rolling hills of Ensay. I mean, it is green as far as the eye can see here. And, of course, all the hills are dotted with red Hereford cattle because I'm at Barry Newcomen's place. He's one of the owners of the Newcomen Herefords and a long-time listener of the Country Hour. Barry, welcome to the Country Hour.
Thank you very much.
Tell me, how long have you been listening to this program?
I've been listening to it ever since it started. I was born in 38 and it started when I was 7 years old and my mother had a radio, a battery-powered radio, and she used to listen to the Country Hour, and so I can't remember the first episode, but I've certainly listened ever since.
So it's possible your mum was listening when we first broadcast in 1945?
Very likely, yes.
And Barry, you actually have presented a livestock report on the Country Hour. Tell us about how that all happened.
Well, after I went away to boarding school and then I finished boarding school, I had an apprenticeship with AML&F, which was Australian Mercantile Land and Finance Company, later became Elders, in Melbourne. And part of that was out at Newmarket where I was reporting. I wasn't reporting, I was recording, booking clerk.
So Newmarket was a livestock sale yard back then, right?
That was the livestock sale yard for Victoria. Mm. And there were country centres, but nowhere near like there are now. It was the big centre. And I was doing this apprenticeship and I was assigned to help this fellow, or learn from this fellow, this elderly gentleman who used to do the market report every day. And I'd only just started with him learning how to do it. And he reported in sick, so the boss said to me, "You better do it, Barry." So I scratched around and tried to work it out. And it was bullock sale day, and there were two well-known bullock buyers there. So I went up to them and asked them, "Well, how is the market today?" And they said, "You're the reporter, you tell us." So I did. I wasn't interviewed, so I must have done it by phone through to the Country Hour, and I didn't get the sack, and I'm still alive, so it couldn't have been too bad.
Well, we appreciate your service, Barry. Well done. Now, the other thing you remember, which was there were two radio drama series that used to run quite close to the Country Hour, the Lawsons and Blue Hills. What do you remember about them?
Well, I can't remember what the stories were about other than they were country stories, serials, Blue Hills started in, I think it was in 1949. I can remember when it swapped over. And when I came back to live in Ensay about mid-50s, I became an agent. No, I came back in 58, that's right, and I became an agent. And I used to go around farmers quite often there at lunchtime. And there was the Country Hour would be on, but after the Country Hour at 1 o'clock was Blue Hills. And nobody could talk during Blue Hills. And everyone knew the story of Blue Hills because there was no television in this area then. And of course, no mobile phones. So Blue Hills was it. And I can remember where I was the day that Blue Hills finished. And after 5,795 episodes, after it finished, the Country Hour really blossomed. It then became the number one thing. Everyone listened to it at lunchtime, and it still is. And I really appreciate it. I congratulated you and Warwick and all the people behind it, and I think it's a great show. And unlike some other programs, it's not political.
Well, we do our best. We do our best. Now, we're just going to talk to some of your neighbours soon. But before we go, Barry, what's this year been like for you? It's been a bit up and down, I think, in Ensay. But let us know.
Very much up and down. We had a big rain in January and February, or mostly January, and then not enough in the autumn. The winter was very cold, the coldest winter I can remember. Look forward to the spring, and all we got in the spring, September and October, was very little rain and wind every day. So we were actually brown and bare here by the end of October, but since then we've had good rains and it's turned things around. The cattle look quite good, but there's not a lot of feed here yet, but it'll grow now. It's good now, so thank heavens for that.
Well, we'll be back in March for the mountain calf sales in Gippsland, and either you or your brother always top the Ensay sale, don't you?
Well, we try. We try.
We try.
Yeah. There's some pretty good calves there. I remarked to one of the agents this year that the lineup of Ensay was remarkable, really, the quality right through to the very end. That's good.
Well, Barry, thanks so much for hosting us today. We're going to talk to some of your neighbours now, but thanks for letting us come up to Ensay. It's been lovely to chat to you.
You're welcome.
Now we're going to talk to a couple of neighbours. We've got Kate Cummins from Swiss Creek, and we've got Simon Turner from Bindi and Reedy Flats. Now, Kate, you are a former science and ag teacher at the local high school.
I taught there for probably the best part of 30 years.
Teaching all the kids about ag. And Simon, you're a local farmer from Bindi?
Yes, been here for all my life pretty much. Went away for a little while, but yep.
And what do you guys know or remember or like about the Country Hour?
Well, I think that I liked hearing the stories on the Country Hour. I know that my husband, who spends a lot of his time in the Toyota by himself, listened to it. And that was where he got his news. He made a lot of connections. He'd hear about what was happening in other parts of the state. And it was just great information. It was great company.
And what about you, Simon? What your memories of the Country Hour?
I suppose they start back as a child, listening to the Country Hour at lunchtime. So you had the old Bakelite radio. They had a cardboard, sort of wax cardboard battery in the back of it. And for me, it was actually quite pleasurable, not for the information so much, as just you had to stop for an hour. So therefore, you had a full hour to yourself, which is good. You know, you could have been crutching sheep all morning or something like that, but you had to have that full hour. So that was my earliest memory.
So your parents let you have a break?
They did, for a little while, until I was able to go out unsupervised.
Yeah. And tell us about your farming property up here.
We operate a property out at Bindi, another property down at Reedy Flat. Sheep and cattle mixed enterprise. We still use a little bit of alpine grazing in the state forest, so it's quite mixed with sheep and diverse area to travel between properties and so forth. Keeps us busy.
And how's your business going and how are things going on your property at the moment?
Oh, look, it's going quite well. Generally speaking, commodity prices are okay. Our costs have risen dramatically, which is a bit of an issue. But for us personally, our son's come back into the business, so it's great to be bringing on the next generation. That's a bit of a rare commodity or ability to do these days, so you know that's keeping Rowan and I enthused into the business, but yeah, so things are ticking along okay.
And Kate, what about your business? What do you do?
Well, our business had its challenges this year. We're at Swifts Creek, but also at Benambra and the other side of Benambra. And our country at Hinnamungee was just bare. It was dreadful. And we didn't have the rain that occurred. It seemed to just spill over from the coastal areas. So we had to activate our drought plan, and we sold cattle early. We sold probably a little bit more than what we'd normally have done. And we'd just be constantly monitoring what we had available to feed, and bought in feed, bought in a lot of pellets in particular, and were feeding that out, had the cattle in containment areas, and looked after them that way. And then again, had to manage the it was very cold over the winter, and you've got to manage yourselves too, because we're very fortunate that the commodity prices were a lot better than what they'd been in previous drought periods. So that kept us optimistic. And then just recently we've had a little bit of rain. We're looking for more, but we've got our get out of jail card.
And when you say you had to manage yourselves, is that sort of like trying to get through that period and working out how you're going to do it?
Yes, yes. You've got to try and be optimistic. You've got to be grateful that the commodity prices are better than what they were, and make sure that you look for the bright side of what can be quite a long, dreary, difficult period until it rains.
Well, you are listening to the Victorian Country Hour, broadcasting live from the High Country in Gippsland, Ensay. Thank you, Simon and Kate, for having a little chat to us. We're going to talk to your son now. Simon, one of the younger generation that's come out to the farm.
Thanks.
So I'll introduce you to Nicole Frost, who's a agronomist in the Ensay region, and also James Turner, and you're at Reedy Flat. Welcome.
Thanks, Emma.
Hi, thank you.
So I'm going to ask you both, you're both younger generation, you obviously look for your own information about your farming business. Does the Country Hour still have relevance in your worlds?
I think it really does. I think, you can get information about what the seasons are doing, what markets are doing, all that sort of thing. But until you get like a first-hand account on how that's actually affecting people on the land, I think that's when all that stuff really comes to life. So, yeah, I think it's that interpretation of how it's impacting people.
And James, where do you get your local farming information? Does Country Hour play a part in that?
Yeah, absolutely. I listen to a breadth of podcasts and read online newspapers and just talking to people. There's a lot of different sources out there now. But I think the Country Hour remains pretty relevant in that. Obviously, as Nikki said, for the weather and the market reports, but also hearing real life stories of what people are doing in other parts of the state and the country. I find it very, very informative. So, yeah.
And you've been back on the farm about 3 years. What prompted you to come back? Why did you see your career on the land?
Yeah, I guess there was always an underlying passion for farming, and particularly farming in this area. And it's pretty unique, this area. But it wasn't until I probably went away and experienced other things and tried other jobs and realised what I was truly passionate about. So. To come
home. So you reckon working for the old man's not so bad, or?
Yeah, it's not so bad. There's 40 minutes between us, so we have time to air off.
And Nicole, what about you? What led you to come back here and start a business?
Good question. It was a bit of a career change for my husband, actually. I had a client who'd moved up here and was looking for a farm manager, and my husband was a chippy at the time and now turned farmer. I've always had a passion, always wanted to live in the hills and get back on a farm. I grew up on a farm, and it just, saying yes led us here, and I think we're about 6.5 years later. So.
And so this season, what are some of the challenges your clients are having in this Ensay region?
We kind of missed spring, so we came out of winter not too bad, but then as it's been said before, we had a lot of wind and not much rain from spring, and we're wet now, which is great. We've got some rain, but missing spring kind of means our pastures sort of go off, and we miss the quality and that real spring flush. So I think a lot of summer cropping actually is showing its potential this year, so keeping quality ahead of stock by putting in a good crop and making the most of summer rain. So that's
Well, that's all the time we've got for today. Thank you, James and Nicole, for wrapping up this NSAE, the younger generation wrapping up the NSAE broadcast. Warwick, it looks absolutely beautiful outside, although I know it's pretty cool wind out there. They are expecting snow down to 1,200 metres, so I think definitely take a jumper when we leave today. But it's just been lovely to meet all these people from the beautiful part of NSAE, a beautiful part of the world.
And a smart day to be inside, Emma Field. Thank you very much for that. Thank you to everybody came out and had a chat to Emma as well, and the fruit packing shed with Justine, and the spud shed for Jay McNaughton. We'll continue our tour around the state tomorrow. Might be in a harvest of weather permitting, although there's been a bit of rain around, hasn't there? We'll also be on a fishing boat, maybe be out on a property up in the northwest too. A whole lot more coming your way here on the Country Hour. But right now, we need to do the other thing we're famous for, right? And that's going to markets. And it's a Monday. We got quite a lot to get through on a Monday. Let's start with maybe sheep and lambs and head to Chris Agnew at Hamilton.
Thanks, Warwick. Hamilton agent sharded 9,600 lambs for the first Monday sale of the year. It was a very good presentation of new season's lambs. However, not all the buying group were present, but those that were fully active in a dearer market. The new season's lambs to the trade for the heavier weights over 26 kilos remained firm, averaging between 1,050 and 1,150 cents a kilogram carcass weight, the best topping at $360. Those under 26 kilos were dearer by $15 to $20 per head to average between 1,050 and 1,120. It was very good feeder and restocker competition. These lambs were dearer. New season's lambs, light lambs from 12 to 16 kilos selling from 147 to 194, while trade lambs 18 to 22 from 210 to 257, lambs in the 22 to 26 kilo range selling from 235 to $300, and the heavier export lambs making from 294 to a top of 360. At Hamilton, this is Chris Agnew reporting for MLA.
To Bendigo now.
Good afternoon. Numbers edged back to 21,100 lambs. Results went from similar to $5 to $15 a head off. But as the market faded, there was a lot of $10 to $10.80, some pens slipping under $10 a kilo. Heavy shorn lambs, $300 to $370, and the tops of the suckers, $300 to $380. Heavy trades, $260 to $280, followed by the general run of mixed trades, $220 to $260. Light lambs were a mixed bag. Some feature lines of little store lambs sold exceptionally well at $180 to $204. A lot of buyers then stepped into the bigger framed light trades at $190 to $230. The sheep market remained impressive, particularly for leaner and lighter mutton, which was dearer again to be tracking either side of 800 cents a kilo. Heavy sheep similar on less weight and quality this week. Heavy ewes, $230 to $274, and merino wethers to $250. Decent light and trade sheep, $160 to $230 for most. Jenny Kelly for MLA.
Caroline Ronald is at Wagga, at Corowera, I should say.
Good afternoon. Agents penned a total of 6,550 lambs and 3,700 sheep, with just over 5,000 new season lambs on offer. Light and medium trade new season lambs up to $6 softer, $205 to $243. Heavy trade slipped $12 to $20, $234 to $270 to average 1,080 cents per kilo carcass weight. Heavy lambs slipped $18, $302 to $312. An extra heavy new season lamb export type sold up to $337. New season lambs shorn heavy trade slipped $8 to $20, $245 to $284. Restockers operated between 105 and 198 for lambs back to the paddock. Mutton trends were mixed. Extra heavy merino ewes slipped $7, $230 to $256. Extra heavy crossbreds gained up to $18, selling up to $310. I'm Caroline Ronald for MLA at Corowa.
To the cattle, Graham Richards at Wagga.
Good afternoon. Cattle numbers continued to lift with 6,510 penned, and this included 1,370 cows. The quality was good, and with plenty of young cattle that suited the feeder orders, grown cattle with condition and weight remain well supplied. The market is selling to a firm to slightly cheaper trend. Weaner steers to restock have reached 560 and the heifers 468. Light feeder steers went against the trend, selling from 450 to 542. Medium weight feeder steers eased 8 cents to average 474. The heavyweights have ranged between 450 and 522. Feeder heifers have lost 15 to 20 cents. Medium and heavy weights, 380 to 460. Most of the trade cattle are ranging from 420 to 480, with a few pens of heavy steers selling to 511. The prime grown steers and bullocks, 420 to 490, while heifers, 442 to 474 for the heavyweights. Heavy cows were firm, 380 to 433. The lighter weights also firm, averaging 378, and more than half the sale is still to be sold.
Thanks very much for that, Graeme. And Shiona can give you a quick pricey of Mortlake.
Good afternoon. Agents pen 1960 cattle. Quality varied, with a large portion of the yarding plainer crossbred and dairy cross types. Cows made up just under half the yarding. All the regular buyers attended in a strong market with mixed results. Young cattle sold to the trade firm. Heifer portion gaining 10 cents. Feeder and restocker type sold firm. Grown steers sold firm to 5 softer. The heifer portion gaining 5 cents in places. Manufacturing steers sold to the trade firm to 6 better. And the dairy portion sold 5 to 12 cents dearer. This is Shiona Lamb at Mortlake for MLA.
Thanks for that, Shiona. Reminder, the Country Hour will be broadcasting this Wednesday from Woods Heritage and Farming Museum at Rapanyup. If you want to come down and celebrate it with us on our actual birthday, if you're around Rapanyup, come and join us then. Otherwise, we'll be back with you tomorrow. It's 1 o'clock.